Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Leonard Littlefinger is a Lakota elder who lives and works in Oglala on the Pine Ridge Reservation. He's a founder of the Lakota Circle Village, which, among other things, is a language school that seeks to connect elders with youth as a way to preserve the Lakota language and culture. He's also one of the organizers of the Teton Lakota History Conference in Rapid City, September 30th through October 2nd. The keynote speaker at the conference is author Kingsley Bray, who wrote the book Crazy Horse, A Lakota Life. And Leonard Littlefinger joins us here in our studios at the Dahl Arts Center in Rapid City. Welcome to Dakota Midday.
Well, thank you, Carl.
Well, this is the sixth anniversary of the Lakota Circle Village. Has that been a successful endeavor as far as helping to preserve the Lakota language by teaching it to young people?
Yes, I think it has the impetus to elevate the seriousness of retaining the language has now spread out to the various schools, and the various schools are now actively involved in programs, including total Lakota immersion. And so I think we've been successful from that standpoint. As far as the Lakota Circle Village language program, we started that at the time of the recession, and as such, it was difficult to get the funding. But in following the guidance from the elders that I knew, one of the primary concerns was that the government had become involved in the decimation of the culture, the language included, and as such, they felt that we needed to do it on our own. And, of course, that's the problem that I fell into. But we've taken a redirection on this, and soon to be going is an immersion program which takes the infant, and in a surrounding where nothing but Lakota is spoken, the infant will learn their first words in the Lakota language, and that's going to be our goal, to also restore one of the value systems that the Lakota people had, and that had to do with the special gifts that were given by our Creator to the women and the children, and they are considered as sacred beings, the woman being given the gift of bringing the next generation forward, and then also the children that are growing up to reach manhood or womanhood are taught all of those value systems that really the perpetuation of the people, as well as the culture that the values are concerned with. So taking that and bringing forward the sacredness of a woman and the sacredness of the child over the past perhaps maybe four or five generations, we've gotten away from that where the women and the children are abused, and that really wasn't part of our culture, our original culture. So our focus is now going to be to establish an accredited daycare center program at Oglala, and it'll be far-reaching, hopefully, as a methodology that myself and many others my age that grew up speaking the Lakota language from a natural setting, hearing our parents or grandparents and whoever else using the Lakota language, and when we said our first words, they were Lakota. And there is probably in this day, not that it's old-fashioned, but it's more of adding to the abilities of a person to have two perspectives, one from the culture that's around us, and then one from the culture that we can readily identify with. And it has its value of being a bilingual speaking person. And so that's our goal, is to be able to do that.
Given the history of Lakota people, as you mentioned, the decimation and the things that that the Lakota people had to go through with the culture and the language, and I'm wondering how much of a challenge it is now today to try to get that back, to get back the Lakota language, to get the newborn speaking the language, and to get the culture back to the way it was and the things that you were talking about.
Yes, it is a bit of a difficulty. Most of the schools today are teaching it for maybe an hour or so, either once or twice a week. But when they go back out of the classroom, then we're into the culture, which is predominantly or primarily English language spoken. And that includes, of course, all the media that's available mm-hmm. with different technology gadgets that are available. So they're immersed in that. And so the difficulty is there. However, I guess I can say that there are serious-minded young people that are interested not only in their language, but their history. Culture is all-encompassing of those things. And so the serious-minded will be the ones that will be able to pick it up. But naturally, in a natural way, the children that will be coming through the program that we're developing will be able to have the two languages. And for some odd reason, in the United States, English is not... it's not the official language of the United States. There's nothing that is indicated in the Constitution that English language is the official language. Yet it is the accepted way of communication. And so as such, everything is spoken in the English language, books, everything that's available. However, for any other group of people from another culture, particularly maybe the Hispanic people, they freely speak it in regular daily life activities, as well as being able to pick up the English language. And there's tests that have been done where immersion language was introduced, particularly in the islands of Hawaii. And children, they began their program back in the 70s, and now you have young people that have been able to achieve their language, their own language, and the tests that have been done to show their comprehension of the English language, and also included is a curriculum that they score predominantly higher than a monolingual speaking person. And I think for those of us that grew up in speaking our language, our Lakota language, as first language and then later acquired the English language, we've been able to pick up something that's very important, and that is that there are two different perspectives that can come out of something that is of an event or some way of life. We're able to decipher between the two, and thus we're able to pick the best of both of the worlds.
Now, you mentioned the Lakota Circle Village and the immersion, Lakota language immersion. Is this something that is fairly new with the Lakota language? Are you looking to the other schools that like the Spanish immersion, the language immersion? Are you using that as sort of a model, or is this something that's been done for some time?
Well, one of the things that I've noticed is that in the current language programs that are being offered on the reservation, it seems to be primarily the use of two things. One is the English methodology of linguistic arts to learn in a certain way, and that certain way is usually first to learn an alphabet, and then secondly the parts of speech, noun, pronouns, adverbs, adjectives, and whatever, and then finally sentence structure. And after sentence structure, of course, comes the thought that comes from that. And so what I've seen, and no disrespect said to the educational system, but it's been largely a translation of the English language back to the Lakota language. And so there are many words, of course, that we don't have for especially the way the English language changes with the use of technology. And the natural way is that you pick it up, and ultimately what comes out of that is that Lakota thought. And that Lakota thought is what has sustained us as a people, perhaps from the very beginning of creation time.
So that Lakota thought is integral to the language. So in order to really get that way of thinking, Lakota thought that you just talked about, it's important to be able to speak Lakota.
Yes. And so, you know, why is it that it's important? I'll ask myself the question. But it's important because first and foremost of any culture is dominated by the spiritual aspect of it, the presence of creation, the presence of the soul. And we're no exception as a people. And in that way, first and foremost, is the spiritual side of it. And in that spiritual side, from the Lakota spirituality, is a connection between everything that has been created. So in English, you'd probably say that it's a land-based, land-oriented language, which considers first and foremost that there is a creator, and that the creator, whom we call Tongashila, or grandfather, created all of the things that exist on Mother Earth. And as such, we're related to all the things, including Mother Earth. And so that relationship is the spiritual way. And sometimes it's perhaps hard to explain from the fact that when I say, what does spirituality mean to you? And for a person that was not raised in the land-based relationships, they will begin to quote the Bible. They'll begin to quote a lot of the historical things. But by and large, they're remiss in the understanding that everything and all are related. So like you and I sitting here in my spiritual way, then you, I would consider you as a brother. And I have the respect for you. And so the extended kinship is very important, and also the understanding of respect for yourself and respect for others. In English thought, it's you be number one. It's not a we, it's an I concept that exists. And so we gradually, through the assimilation process that has happened over the past generations, maybe 5 to 8 generations. The reservations were established in around 1888 in this part of the country. And so with each generation, there has been a gradual loss of that perception. And so in restoring that, you know, I am not a judge to say that one is better than the other. However, I know that I can distinguish some of those relationships that I have from the culture that's around us with my own culture, and I can pick the best of that. So I'm very comfortable in saying that you are my brother. And in the English way or the other culture way, then if I'm beyond the third cousin, I no longer exist as a relative. And we're finding that true with some of the younger people today in that extended kinship. My son was just talking about it as we came up, and there's a niece that would probably be about the fourth generation, and she told him that, I don't know you, so I can't call you uncle. And so all he said was, go back and check your family history, and that perception would be there. So it's important from the standpoint, I think, of the spiritual, which in the English way you could say it's a holistic methodology of practicing that relationship with God or Tongashila.
Well, Leonard Finger, we're almost out of time, but I want to make sure we talk touch on the Teton Lakota History Conference, and this is coming up in a couple of weeks. And what's this conference for, and what's the goal of the conference?
Yes, thank you. Well, what we're doing is we're making a conference that is as close as one can possibly get to the perspective that comes from the people themselves, the people that made the history. And that history, of course, is all the way back to, I guess, when the United States government wrote a treaty with the Lakota people, the Seven Council Fire people, and it goes beyond that. And it's not necessarily to say, well, you know, government, you did wrong. It's as much as to say, what is the significance of the spiritual connection with the Black Hills? And the Black Hills are really a part of a total spiritual sacred site locations. And so what we want to do is we've put together some speakers that are, as close as I can see, very intimately aware of... it's kind of like looking at a coin. You see one side of a coin, and you flip it over, and it's the other side of the coin has a different image. Well, this conference is organized and established so that we can be able to provide that perspective to students, to teachers, and to people that are just generally interested in that perspective of what we view life as it is. And as such, we have the speakers. Kingsley Bray is one of them. Another gentleman by the name of Ephraim Dixon. He is he grew up around the Crawford area and grew up aware of the Lakota history. And he's also one of the speakers. And then we have what I call a Council of Lakota Wisdom Keepers. It's an organized group of elders. The oldest being 86 and the youngest being 74. And so they'll be there to share some of the perspectives of life that they've gone through. And we also at that time will be talking about organizing a council of Lakota Wisdom Keepers from the people that attend the conference itself. So we've allowed, there is a registration fee that's there, but we've waived that registration fee for the elders that will be coming. And we're also talking, and we'll be talking with some of the principals that we will also waive that registration fee for students. We really hope that we can get as many young people and, of course, other people that are interested in it, either as an occupation or as just there for their own enjoyment, to come to this conference. It's actually the first conference that I'm aware of that was organized by the people that made the history.
So that's the Teton Lakota History Conference, October 2nd through the 4th at the Ramkota Hotel and Convention Center here in Rapid City.
2nd through through October 2nd.
October 2nd.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Leonard Littlefinger, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Leonard Littlefinger is a Lakota elder, lives and works in Oglala on the Pine Ridge Reservation. He's also the founder of the Lakota Circle Village, and he's one of the organizers of the upcoming Teton Lakota History Conference in Rapid City at the Ramkota Hotel and Convention Center, October 2nd through the 4th.